You do not know what you are talking about.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back and thanks for listening. Cyrus, I'm not going to say what it was, but did you see that story about McDonald's in the New York Post this morning?
Yeah, you sent it to me and my stomach immediately turned. It's awful. I can't, ugh.
I'm not going to say what it is. I prayed about it and I decided not to say anything, but if...
Why did they have this a Twitter to feed. Me? Why?
You need to know.
I can't get it out of my...
You need to know. Head. You need to know. Ugh. Hey, by the way, you know how bad things are getting in Australia, right? With all the lockdowns and bubble buddies. You have to register with the government if you want to have somebody to your house and vice versa. You remember all that. We've covered that for the last week or so, right?
Yes. I was thinking about doing my terrible Australian accent, but... We got some.
Do it.
We got
Do
some
it.
Nasty.
Entertain us. Entertain
us. We upset some people by doing
what?
Yeah. We got some emails about, doing impressions of other accents is a
oh
no
my
no no.
Yep. People can be so thin skinned. Come on,
man.
All right. Well, we're pressing forward with this story here. Is it any surprise that given all of the insanity that's going on down there? The COVID insanity with the lockdowns and the bubble buddies and the registering with the government and all of the things that that Australians in greater and greater numbers now are trying to leave Australia. Fascinating story here. According to figures from the Australian Border Force, 37,979 applications were received from individuals hoping to leave Australia. A large portion of the applicants were rejected. I'm sorry, your bubble buddy didn't sign off on this. You're not allowed to leave. I don't know if that's actually the response they got. But it's interesting to see people are... I mean, Australia is a beautiful country. They have the most poisonous snakes, or the most poisonous snake in the world is there in Australia. So that's a downside. But it's a beautiful country, lovely place to live, and people want out because they don't want to live that way. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Dagoberto in Los Angeles, California. Good morning.
Good morning, Patrick.
Yeah.
I just want to ask you something. I want to comment on the abortion issue. I think everybody knows that abortion was aimed to kill most of the black people, to get rid of the black community. And I wonder myself why you see so little, a small group of people, the black people, on the March for Life or protesting for abortion, which is actually what's aimed to kill them. Mm-hmm. Even to me, what's astonished me, even the Black Lives Matter, they argued to defend abortion themselves. Mm-hmm. That was part of their rights that they went to defend. Right. And it seems like the Democrats, which is a party of abortion, owns the black community. You know, like Biden say with a black person that told him he was going to go for Republican, he said, you ain't black. I mean, that seems like they own them. And the only thing that I came up, my final thought about it is that they still have the slave mentality. They do what they're told. By the white people, like this white Democrat party.
Well, let's stop there. First of all, I don't agree with you if you're saying that black people today have a slave mentality. I think that is a very inflammatory thing to say, especially under the current circumstances.
I'm not using the word to offend them.
Well, I think it will offend regardless. I do.
Then, okay, now give me another way to express myself for this, mm-hmm. because I mean, actually, they don't protest against abortion, and it was aimed for them.
Some do. Now, let me give you an example. There is a website called blackgenocide.org that is, it's not banned, but if you type in black genocide, you will not find the website on Google because they block it out. They censor it. But it is a website that is operated by a man who is he wants to promote the awareness of what is going on in the black community. And this is why that is, it's made invisible. So if you were to, again, try it, go to Google and type in blackgenocide.org, it won't come up. So they want, they don't want people to know about what you're referring to, which is the devastating impact that abortion has, especially in the black community. And this article, I'm sorry, this website provides ample information. It's chock full of documentation of this very fact that you're making. And as you can imagine, big abortion doesn't want people to see this because that's a big income stream. They don't want people to know about this. So we'll get a link posted to this if you're interested so that you can see it for yourself.
Okay, I will try it. I will try it. Yeah, and try again, it. I said, I don't say this because to offend them, but I just kind of wonder because we're 48 years of abortion in this country, and this is too much. Mm-hmm. So, and I wonder why even the Black Lives Matter defend abortion. You can understand that.
Yeah, and the reason for that, if you want my opinion, Dagoberto, is because Black Lives Matter as an organization, they don't really care about black lives per se. They care about using the political force that they've amassed to consolidate power and exert their influence in popular society. And if they really were concerned about all black lives, then they would be concerned about this. This is just another example of the hypocrisy on the left, where they say pretty things about people and racial groups, but when it comes down to it, they don't really mean it. And that's why, furthermore, the Black Lives Matter website was expunged of all of the incriminating evidence that they originally had in their About Us section of the website. I read it verbatim. This is in the immediate aftermath of the riots and everything that were taking place after George Floyd's killing. And it was very, very up front and center, you know, that they want to queer America. They want to, I wish we could, maybe Cyrus, we could find that and we could play it at some point, not necessarily today. But to your point, Dagoberto, once people in the mainstream began to figure out what they were saying about themselves on their own website, they took that down in a red hot hurry because it was bad for business, and it showed a light on them that they didn't really want people to know about. So they changed it and they made it look much more, you know, much less offensive than it really is. Anyway, I appreciate your phone call, and this is an important topic. We'll return to it as necessary. Thank you. Let's go to John in Reno. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, John.
My sister got used to, during the coronavirus, watching mass on TV. Now that the coronavirus is largely gone, she still wants to watch it on TV. She doesn't want to go and actually receive the sacrament. How can I convince her that it's good to go and actually receive the sacrament?
Is she married by chance?
She's married, and she takes care of my nephew, who I'm primarily concerned about.
Fair enough. But she's married. She has a husband whom she loves, right?
Yes.
Okay. So ask her, which would she prefer, to spend the rest of her life with a picture of her husband or to spend the rest of her life with her husband? And ask her, which would she prefer? What do you think she would say?
With her husband.
Right. Any normal person would say that. I mean, if you can't be with the one you love, and I'm not referring to the song, but if you can't be with the one you love, having a picture of that person is the next best thing. You know, to remember fondly the person that you love. But I would rather be with my wife than with a picture of my wife. If I couldn't be with my wife, I'd rather have a picture of her than not, but I'd rather have her than a picture of her. And the analogy here, John, maybe you can make this to her, is that watching mass on television is great if you can't get to mass, but if you can get to mass, why on earth would you settle for pixels on a screen when you could be with the Lord and the community together under one roof? I mean, hopefully she'll see the analogy and she'll see that choosing to go to, quote unquote, go to mass by watching it on television is not the same thing by a long shot as going to mass. Now, in her diocese, if she lives in Reno, I don't know where she lives, but my guess is that the Sunday obligation has been reinstated, in which case she needs to go to mass. She doesn't have the option to stay at home and watch it on TV anymore.
Yeah, she lives in Washington, D.C. She needs to go to mass.
Mm-hmm. There's an old saying, I'm sure you've heard it, John, that water seeks the path of least resistance. Or another version is water flows downhill. And that's true of human nature in general. That if we allow ourselves to get lazy and weak, then we will choose the easiest course of action rather than often the better course of action often is more difficult. And we will just choose the easy course of action. It sounds like that may be what's going on here. Just simple human nature.
Mm. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I hope that your next conversation with her gives her some encouragement to get back to going to see Jesus in person. That's the best possible way. Thanks for the call, John. Let's go now to Alex in Miami. Hi, Alex.
Hey, Patrick. I had a question for you. I heard something said about the, you know, the guys who talk on TV and stuff like that, like Joel Osteen.
The health and wealth preachers?
Yes, mm-hmm. We listen to his word, and he talks about faith, and we listen to you, and I listen to Relevant Radio. So I wanted to hear what your take is on, for example, all these people that talk on the TV.
The prosperity gospel people?
Yes.
Okay.
How do you feel about
that? I think it's a waste of your time. For the following reasons. Number one, the premise of the health and wealth gospel or the prosperity gospel is that if you just have enough faith, God is going to give you whatever you want. You can name it and claim it. You want a new car, name it and claim it and have enough faith. And oh, by the way, the way you show your faith is to send me, the televangelist, your money. If you send your money to the televangelist, then that's the trigger that God's going to say, oh, okay, I see that... you know, that Alex in Miami has faith, okay, I'm going to give Alex that new car that he wanted, or the raise, or the trophy wife, or the bigger house, or the money in the bank, etc. It's always...
Get that in your spirit.
Exactly. So that's the problem at its essence, Alex, is that it's a distortion of the meaning of faith. Now, Hebrews 11, chapter 11, verse 1 says, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. And what they do is they twist that to say, well, you're hoping for a big car, aren't you? You're hoping for a pretty wife, aren't you? You're hoping for money in your bank account, aren't you? Of course you are, because you want to live like I do. I have a private jet. And by the way, lest anybody come into the conversation not sure what I'm talking about, I'm talking about prosperity preachers. I'm speaking in that person's voice. I don't have a private jet. Cyrus, can you back me up on that one? Do I have a private jet?
You have two.
I have none.
You have none. Very humble man.
Well, don't lay it on too thick, but no, I've never had a private jet. I've seen them flying through
all
the air.
All your money goes in Lamborghinis and crocodile
not even
boots.
I got a midlife Chrysler. When I was about 40.
I like that.
I did. Instead of getting a red sports car, I bought a midlife Chrysler. That was my midlife Chrysler, was a Chrysler Town and Country minivan. That's what I bought at midlife. Anyhow, okay, so I'm not talking about me. I'm speaking in the voice, Alex, of the televangelist. Of course you want a big house, or several big houses for that matter. Of course you want to have a lot of money in the bank. Of course you want a private jet and Arabian stallions and membership at Augusta Golf Country Club and all the other things that I've got. And the reason I've got it is because I have faith. Now, if you have faith and you send in your seed money, you plant your seed in the form of sending me $100 or what have you, then God sees your faith and God will start giving you those things, because it says in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, faith is the assurance of things hoped for. And you're hoping for those things, aren't you? And it's the conviction of things not seen. So in other words, have the conviction that you will get these things, even though you don't see them yet, by calling the 800 number on the screen and sending me your money.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's
the
problem.
I don't fund them at all. I fund the church, and I like I said, my backbone and everything, my beliefs and everything, are with the church and Jesus Christ. I just wanted to hear what you said, what you had to say about that, because we do listen to him once in a while, if not all the time.
Why though?
I mean, once in a while.
Why?
Just for the. Just for the words of faith or whatever that they.
But he's a false teacher, Alex. He's a false teacher, and for that matter, let me add this in there. It's all happy talk. It's all happy talk.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
So
that's
why bother
with
that?
I wanted to get your take on it. Yeah, I wanted to hear what you had to say about that, because I trust in more in what you say that. Anything else? So,
well, thank you. I appreciate the confidence, Alex. And I'm not trying to shoot you down. Please don't leave our conversation feeling, you know, defeated. I don't mean to make you feel that way.
No,
I hope I haven't.
No,
but
not at all.
You know, if I saw you eating a steady diet of Twinkies and donuts and, you know, sugary drinks, I'd say, you know, that's really bad for you. This is just empty, bad calories. And I think that's what the health and wealth preachers are too. Sweet in the mouth and sour in the stomach.
Got you. Thanks for your knowledge.
All right, Alex. Thank you. Thank you for listening to me. I appreciate that. Let's go now to Philip in Salt Lake City. Hi, Philip.
Hi. You just read something about the Australia not letting people out of their country, and that's a bigger violation of the catechism statement that people have a right to emigrate than not letting people into your country. I mean, if you look at most of the real dictatorships around the world, they do not let people leave. It's really concerning to me that a country like Australia, that has a history of being reasonably free, is now saying people cannot leave. You know, that's, and you know,
you can check out any time you want, but you can never leave. I think I've heard it put that way
before.
That's
exactly right. Yes, yeah. So said the Eagles, right?
Right.
Anyway, so I just thought that that's the thing. I mean, Cuba doesn't let people leave, right? You know, well, seldom lets people leave. They choose who they allow to leave. Right. And that's a whole...
Oh, and it gets worse than that. It gets worse than that, Philip. Los Cubanos who leave Cuba in boats and they come to the United States, guess what? They get turned back. Now, the people who come up through the Mexican border, come on in. Welcome. But if you're Cuban, they treat you differently. If you're a refugee fleeing the Castro regime or the remnants of the Castro regime and you come to Florida, they have orders to turn you back and send you back there. It's a double standard. And one of the reasons why, I think anyway, is because Cubans, by and large, tend to be Republican and pro-life voters. And politically,
I agree with you on
that's
that.
The wrong Please, kind of immigrant. Yeah. I'm just putting that out there.
No, I agree with the political connection that you make there. But, you know, if you were to rate countries, and I get irate when I see these ratings of countries on freedom, they never take into account how free are you to leave with your property, you know? If you are, if it's a truly free country, they will have policies that do not encourage people to want to leave. Okay? They will have policies that encourage people to stay. And many of the countries that are higher than I think they should be have such policies. And it really grieves me that Australia now is in that. Is in that group of countries that doesn't let people leave. They've always had very restrictive
some of them
immigration policies.
Some of them. They're not.
Well,
they're not.
Everybody should.
They're
be
not.
Able to leave.
I agree. All I'm saying is that they're not saying that absolutely nobody can leave, but it's, there's a certain group, a significant number of people that they're not allowing to leave. And you're right. I agree with you.
They shouldn't have a policy that says, I am concerned about who leaves. Everybody who wants to leave should be allowed to leave.
I agree. That's a great way to put it. And I'll be right back with more. Thank you, Philip. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com.
Welcome back, 888-914-9149. Cyrus, back to that New York Post story about McDonald's.
No. No.
No. Okay. All right.
If you want to,
man's
got
to know his limits, right?
Yeah. If you want to know what Patrick's talking about.
No.
No. Okay.
I don't want to
people to it. All right.
It's on the New York Post Twitter feed. If you want to look for it that way. Enough said. Did you see the picture? I know you did because we talked about it earlier. But just rhetorically, what did you think about the transgender fighter Alana McLaughlin, who won an MMA debut fight, the second openly transgender woman, I'm going to put that in quotation marks, this is from the New York Post, to compete in the MMA in the United States, won her debut Friday night via submission at the Combat Global Prelims in Miami. I'm reading it carefully because I'm trying to autocorrect as I go.
It makes me sick. This is a story of a biological man beating up a woman till she submits, and this is good for the MMA. And where are the women activists?
You got to
see this
feminists.
Picture. Where are the feminists? This is a man. I mean, this is just look at his legs. They're bigger than she is. Of course.
Well, check it out. He, McLaughlin, I can't bring myself to say she because it's not a she. He was a U.S. Army Ranger. He was U.S. Army Special Forces. I presume that's the Army Rangers.
This guy's a beast.
He's 38 years old. I'm just going to read this to you, okay, Cyrus? It'd be easier for me just to read it.
All right.
Okay, this is from New York Post. The 38-year-old used a rear naked choke against Celine Provost, who is the actual woman in this fight, to end the match 3 minutes, 32 seconds into the second round. McLaughlin, who began, I'm going to just adjust as necessary to correct the incorrect terminology in the article. McLaughlin, who began his gender transition after leaving the U.S. Army Special Forces in 2010, said he hopes to be a pioneer for transgender athletes in combat sports. I want to pick up the mantle that Fallon put down, McLaughlin said to OutSports before the fight, referring to Fallon Fox, who in 2012 became the first transgender woman to fight in MMA. Right now, he said, I'm following in Fallon's footsteps. I'm just another step along the way, and it's my great hope that there are more to follow behind me. Fox, who sat cage side Friday, said, and this is, I want to tie this in. So Fallon Fox is the one he's referring to, who last fought in 2014. 4 years later, Patricio Manuel became the first transgender male to compete in a pro boxing match in the United States when he beat, Hugo Aguilar in a unanimous decision. McLaughlin, who's the guy we're talking about now, the guy with the purple hair, began training a year ago and was cleared to fight by the Florida State Boxing Commission after having his hormone level tested, according to ESPN. He said it was a nightmare fighting an opponent. I have nothing but respect for Provost. This is the woman that he beat up. I mean, you'd go to jail, Cyrus, if you did this in any other context, if this were to happen in any other context.
As you should.
But he has nothing but respect for her. The fight was originally scheduled for August 6th, but it was postponed after Provost, a 35-year-old boxing and MMA veteran, tested positive for the coronavirus. That is Celine Provost, the woman that he fought. Provost landed multiple punches in the first round before McLaughlin came out on top. As he was declared the victor, he wore a shirt with the phrase "End Trans Genocide." What? What?
I'm scrolling through the tweets now, and because I always find it interesting to find what, you know, people with alternative viewpoints think. And every once in a while, I'll be like, yeah, you know, that makes me look at this in a new light. I'm not finding that here at all. No. Here's one I've got. For those of you complaining, you obviously didn't watch the fight. It wasn't a cake. It wasn't a cakewalk for her.
Do that more often. That voice you're doing you like now. That? Put that character into rotation.
This is mind-boggling that this is real. What is going on?
I know. Oh, by the way, you had asked me during a break earlier in the show whether U.S. postal workers are exempt from the vaccine mandate. I now have an answer for you.
Oh, good. Yeah.
You ready? Okay. This is courtesy of the Daily Caller. United States Postal Service employees will receive COVID-19 vaccines under rules issued by the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, and not rules for the federal government, multiple outlets reported Thursday. The Washington Post initially reported that the independent agency, that's the USPS, which employs nearly 500,000 people, would not be required to comply with Biden's new executive order tightening vaccine requirements. A federal official later clarified to CNN that the USPS would still be governed under the Labor Department and OSHA rulemaking. So the answer is yes, they are going to be mandated to get it, all of the mail characters and mail carriers and mail sorters and all the mail people. And I don't mean mail as in M-A-L-E. I mean mail as in M-A-I-L. But it will be the OSHA ruling that will require them to get. What do they call it? What do you call it, Cyrus? The ouchie fauci? What's your term for the
ouchie fauci? I like that. Yeah.
The ouchie fauci. So that, I mean, if you wondered, I mean, you were wondering. Oh, check this out. It's from the Daily Mail. A hospital in upstate New York is now having to stop delivering babies after six workers in the maternity unit have resigned instead of getting the COVID-19 vaccine. They've announced they're going to temporarily stop delivering babies. Lewis County General Hospital in Lowville, it said on Friday that they're going to stop delivering babies after September 24th. So what did the women do? Just hang on. I mean, obviously they have to go somewhere else. According to WWNY, the hospital said it will work with the state's Department of Health to make certain the maternity ward doesn't close permanently. The county health system chief executive officer said, if we can pause the service and now focus on recruiting nurses who are vaccinated, we will be able to re-engage in delivering babies here in Lewis County. And this is just one example of things that we're seeing all around the country, Cyrus, where those who are saying they don't want to go and get the vaccine. Because remember, Nancy Pelosi just 4 months ago was saying, we can't do it. We can't force people to get a vaccine. We can't do that. We don't do that kind of thing. We would never do that. But of course, now that's happening. And for those who don't want to get the vaccine, and many people already have the vaccine. And then you've got many more, or at least a significant number of people who have natural immunity. Dr. Fauci said that. We heard that this morning. That, you know, you make a good point, Dr. Gupta. We haven't really thought about that. We'll have to have a discussion about that. You know, what about the people who have the natural vaccine? So this is starting to hit around the country where people who have decided that they don't want the vaccine. And by the way, before you sit down and write the nastygram, I'm not saying don't get a vaccine. I'm not saying that. I'm just reporting on the fact that this phenomenon where the whole country, if you work for an employer who has 100 employees or more, and I dare say that's probably most of the country's labor force fit into that category. You have to have the vaccine. All federal employees have to have the vaccine except for Congress. They're exempted for reasons unknown. Some people are saying, well, I'm opting out, and it's leading to these kinds of difficulties. Now, there's another related in a way. Cyrus, I think you have the audio about the rise of the robots, right? With regard to how things are changing in light of what COVID has done to the economy and people now with the stimulus checks. Oh, give an example, Cyrus. I don't know what you and Melanie did after church yesterday, but Nancy and I stopped for a bite of lunch at P.F. Chang's, which is a really cool Asian restaurant that we've liked for many years, and we stopped in for a lettuce wrap. And the place was largely empty. And this is a large restaurant that can accommodate, you know, a few hundred people at any given time. And it was largely empty. And the girl at the front counter, you know, the hostess, she said, oh, that'll be like a 20, 30 minute wait. And I said, why? I mean, there's hardly anyone in here. She said, because we only have three waiters. Now, normally you might have 20 waiters in a restaurant like this. So she said, we can't open it up to capacity because we only have three waiters. I said, why do you only have three waiters? She said, because we can't get anybody to work. We can't find anybody to come in and make some sweet moolah with the tips that are very generous at a restaurant like that. May I say to you?
And so we had to wait. Because here, well, in Wisconsin, they only pay servers like $2.15 an hour.
So, well, I guess you make it up on the tips, though, right?
That's what some people say, but it's still a slave. It's a slave wage.
I don't know, but I've been told.
Yeah, it's a slave wage. I mean, who $2.15?
But okay, fair enough. But I have known, and some of my adult children have done waitering jobs.
Yeah, me too.
And you know, they said, "Dad, I made $200 in tips tonight." You know, Dad, I made one person tip me $50, that kind of thing. So, I mean, here's my view. If you are vivacious and friendly and attentive and all the things that you want in a server, you will be more often than not well tipped. So I'm not trying to go to war one way or the other over this issue. All I'm saying is Nancy and I, we wanted to go in for a lettuce wrap, and this normally bustling restaurant would typically at any given time, at least 100, maybe sometimes 200 people in there. And it's a beehive of activity, and it was largely empty, but we had to wait for 20 minutes because there were only three waiters. And the reason there were only three waiters is because they couldn't get anybody to work. And I asked our waiter, I said, why do you think this is happening? And he said, well, you know, stimulus. Actually, no, it wasn't the waiter. It was the hostess. When she seated us finally, and I said, why do you think this is happening? She says, I think because of the stimulus checks and because of unemployment, and people are telling us they can make more money by staying at home than coming into work.
Yep.
So you have some audio about how technology is kicking in to fix this, right?
Yeah, the robot uprising is right around the corner, folks.
All right, let's hear it. Now, who is this from? Who's our source?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't have that screen.
When it's over, tell us.
Yep, I'll look it up while,
okay.
While we're
here
playing.
We go.
All right, here we go.
In the month of July, Texas added over 72,000 jobs. About 18,000 of those were in the Dallas-Plano-Irving metro area. And even still,
one of the things that's happening is some workers are saying, I don't want to go back to that.
In one of the fastest growing states in the country, many of those roles are going unfilled. Ed Sills of Texas AFL-CIO, a state labor union, says it's likely the low wages of service jobs and the Delta variant keeping folks from clocking back in.
They found that maybe working the night shift or being paid $8 an hour is something that can be improved upon. And they found ways to do it somehow during this pandemic.
But some businesses have grown tired of waiting for applications altogether. The Dallas restaurant, Laduni, has turned to robots for workers.
I had people who tell me, well, they're taking people's jobs. Guess what? No, they're not taking anybody's job because there's no one showing up. What they are doing is helping the ones who are really working.
Their owner says they have a third of the staff they had pre-pandemic and that hiring has been nearly impossible. Their three robots take guests to tables, bring out orders, and even sing happy birthday. The goal isn't to replace all their staff, but to help supplement the jobs no one else seems to want.
And they don't complain, and they're happy to do it.
Ed says until those jobs become more desirable, it's no surprise businesses will have to get creative.
The market is finally working on behalf of workers.
He does believe eventually the labor shortage will level, but it will likely take COVID calming down and improved pay for workers.
I think it's probably part of a stage of recovery rather than something permanent. What I hope is permanent is the realization by employers in order to hire, you need to offer something that goes beyond a poverty wage.
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
That was CNN, I believe, right?
Yeah, that's right. That came from CNN.
All right. Well, I know we have a break coming, but real quick, I like that one line about the robots. They never complain.
You can tell this robot, guy is just sick of these people.
They never complain. And they're happy to do it. I didn't know the robots could be happy.
Yep. They're happy to do it until they get enough artificial intelligence and they realize they're smarter, stronger, and last longer than humans.
Skynet. Someone should make a movie about that. Real quick before the break, tying in with this, Amazon, they're feeling the same pinch that all these other places are, where they just can't get enough workers. So they've rolled out a new perk. And I think this is wonderful. I really do. I think this is great. They will pay for your college education. Amazon Inc. has offered to pay college tuition for more than 750,000 U.S. employees as the battle for hourly workers escalates beyond minimum wage. So, Cyrus, when your son graduates from high school, assuming that this program's still in place, and he wants a free ride, a four-year free ride scholarship. I mean, he wouldn't live on campus because he's got to be in the warehouse slinging boxes, but he would have his 4 years of college tuition paid for by Amazon if he were to work at Amazon. That's kind of a neat deal, don't you think?
That's a great deal. Yeah. I was paying on my student loans for forever.
Yeah.
So it'd be nice to get that done in a couple of years.
Yeah, and it's all free. So here's how it's being reported in the Wall Street Journal. Amazon said Thursday that it will cover the cost of tuition and books for staff pursuing bachelor's degrees at various universities nationwide. Hourly employees will be eligible for the new perk after 90 days on the job. The company has hired 400,000 employees during the pandemic, but it is looking to reduce turnover and bring on tens of thousands of additional hourly staffers to work in its fulfillment centers. Employees working as little as 20 hours a week will be eligible for the college benefit. I mean, this is remarkable.
That's awesome.
It's just, and as we talked about recently, I'm trying to remember the name, Walmart, they're now doing the same thing. They were charging $1 a day if you wanted to be part of that program. But now they've just waived that for all of their employees. So employees at Walmart, employees now with this new program at Amazon, will have their college paid for as part of their job slinging boxes or ringing up sales. It's an amazing revolution in what's going on right now. If you're looking for a job and you don't mind working next to a robot from time to time and you'd like some free college as part of it, you know, the world is your oyster. The sky's the limit. It's amazing what's going on right now. And we have to take a break. Cyrus, do you think your job could be done by a robot? Be honest.
I'm a little scared to answer.
All right. We'll let that slide for now. We'll come back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this.
I'll be back.
You have a special place in God's plan for the world. Learning about Christ's role in history can change your life and strengthen your faith. Right now, get free access to Christendom College's online history class at principalsclasses.com/Madrid.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now on Relevant Radio.
America's oldest living World War II veteran, Lawrence Brooks, celebrated his 112th birthday yesterday. A little bit about him. He's the oldest living World War II veteran. He was born on September 12, 1909. He served in the U.S. Army from 1940 to 1945 as part of the predominantly African-American 91st Engineer Battalion. He was stationed in New Guinea, followed by the Philippines, and rose to the rank of private first class during the war. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards tweeted a photo with the vet on Sunday, thanking him for his service on Sunday, where he can be seen in a mask, standing and looking healthy. I'm looking at him right now. Looking good. A flyover of World War II era aircraft was organized for Brooks' birthday last year amid the COVID-19 pandemic. After his 110th birthday, his daughter Vanessa Brooks told NOLA.com that her father is blind in his right eye and his vision is failing in his left, but that his hearing is remarkable and he's never had heart problems, cancer, or any other major illness aside from low blood pressure and some dehydration. So he's still going strong, and he's the last living World War, or I'm sorry, not the last, the oldest living World War II veteran. I love stories like that. And happy birthday, sir. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Adelise listening in Bakersfield. Hello, Adelise.
Hi, Patrick. Recently, I picked up a book about haunted hotels, and it made me wonder if purgatory was here on Earth in the essence of ghosts. Because if their ghosts are here, because they haven't left yet, because they're, you know, they're still chained by something unfinished. Would that be like purgatory, how we're waiting for our sins to be resolved?
Interesting question. I find those fascinating. Well, we know that something is happening, some phenomenon is taking place at these so-called haunted hotels or haunted houses. I mean, something's really going on in some cases. What could it be? So it seems to me that there are a few possibilities. One is it could be demonic activity, and so it could be a demon who's taking the form of a human being. It could be a soul in purgatory who, by God's permission, is manifesting as a way to maybe ask for prayer. It could be a damned soul that, by God's permission, is appearing. And I suppose it could also be, you know, maybe somebody's imagination, or there may be some natural explanation for what sometimes passes for ghosts. But I don't think we could explain it away naturally in all of those cases. I think there is something otherworldly that is taking place. And those three possibilities, to my mind, seem to be the answer. So what about purgatory? Well, I don't think that purgatory, strictly speaking, is here on Earth in a temporal or spatial sense, Adelise. In other words, it's not like purgatory is superimposed over this life on this earth. Now, it's not impossible, but everything that Scripture tells us about is that the place where people go when they die is the underworld. And here's some food for thought. When Jesus gives an explanation of this very issue in Luke chapter 16, he talks about Lazarus and the rich man. I'm sure you know the story, where the rich man goes to a place of fiery torment, and Lazarus, the poor man, he goes to a place of peace and tranquility. They both go down. They go into the underworld, Hades in Greek, Sheol in Hebrew, and they're in two separate regions of the underworld. Now, think about that from what Jesus said, but also think about what happened in Fatima in 1917 when Our Lady appeared to the three children there. You probably know that story, don't you, about Fatima?
I believe so.
Okay. That's where Our Lady appeared several times to three shepherd children in rural Portugal, and it culminated with the miracle of the sun on October the 13th, 1917. Does that sound familiar? Have you heard about that?
No. I know the Juan Diego story.
Okay. That's good. This is different. And I would encourage you, look this up online. It's Fatima, F-A-T-I-M-A. It's an approved apparition of Mary in Portugal in 1917. So a little over 100 years ago. But the reason I mention this is because before the miracle of the sun took place in one of her earlier apparitions, she showed the children a vision of hell. And this is what I find striking, is that the ground, Lucia, who later became a religious sister, she said that they saw the ground open in front of them. And looking down into the ground, they could see hell for a matter of moments. Apparently, it didn't last very long, but they could see the fire and the damned souls and the demons and things like that. So the reason I reference that is because here again, it seems consistent with the biblical account of the underworld where souls go down. And does that mean physically inside our planet? Does it mean that? I don't know how to answer that question, really. But there's a lot of emphasis in Scripture about that as a motif, that they are underground, whatever that means exactly. So all I can say with regard to your question is that the haunted hotels, the ghosts, the phenomena like that may well be, could possibly be souls in purgatory asking for prayer, or it could be those other options. But we still don't know. It's still a mystery to us what exactly those things are.
Thank you for answering the best you get.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I hope that's helpful to you. Thank you. A good book you might want to read is called Hungry Souls. It's a book about purgatory. You may find that helpful as well. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Jim in Long Beach. Hello, Jim.
Oh, I am outraged. I demand to know, I don't know, have you listened to Joel Osteen? I mean, it's not like he's Peter Popoff. I mean, I just wanted to make a few points. One, sure. There was that bishop in Australia. He actually got sent to jail, and he wouldn't even wake up to go to Mass in the morning. He said he would listen to Joel Osteen, and he said it was really inspiring and helped him through his day.
Slow down, Jim. Just tell me what it is you're outraged about exactly.
Well, I'm outraged that, you know, you're trying to paint him as a certain type of guy, like, you know, buy the miracle spring water, and then, you know, you'll get $1 million in the mail, and that's not, I don't know if you've listened to Joel Osteen, that's not it at all, and to try and knock him just because Lakewood tries to take a salary, I mean, I have a very favorite religious program, you should hear how this...
Hang on a second, because Lakewood takes a salary, I don't understand, what does that mean? Lakewood takes a salary, what does that mean?
Joel Osteen doesn't take a salary from his church, Lakewood. His salary comes from other things, like his books and whatnot. He does not. So when he's asking for money to support his ministry, it doesn't go to, you know, what's it called, fill his coffers and to buy his private jet. Now, he might have a private jet. I have no idea. But my point is to knock him and his network for asking for money. That's not charitable. Like I say, I have a favorite religious network. They ask for money during their pledge drive, and you should hear how they market this, you know, when it happens, if you know what I mean.
I think I do, and I think you're being two-faced about this. Number one, you don't like the fact that I'm critical of him, but you seem very free to be critical of me. How does that work?
I'm not. How am I critical of you?
You're telling me that you're outraged by what you heard me say.
Well, yeah, I'm outraged because you're trying to paint him as this schmuck, but is your...
I didn't say he was a schmuck. I didn't say any of the things that you're assuming, or you're reading things into what I said. I was talking about the health and wealth prosperity gospel preachers in general, and the gentleman who called me asked me what I thought about Joel Osteen in particular, and I said specifically about him that it's all happy talk, and that he's a false teacher because he gives the wrong definition or a twisted definition of grace. I'm sorry, of faith.
Have you?
Okay, for the third or fourth time, yes, I have listened to Joel Osteen more than once, and at length, I have listened to him.
I admit it's cotton candy spirituality, okay? It's nothing but, you know, God loves you, you know, if you just have faith, you know, God will at least look after you. But my point is, I don't think you were, how can you say that if you've actually listened to him? There's nothing he says that's like that in terms of,
well,
you know,
his whole background, Jim, I mean, he is successful as a pastor. Cyrus just handed me some information here. So he has a Ferrari, he has a private jet, as you suggested. He took a $4.4 million federal PPP loan to help his ministry. Okay, fair enough. That was legal. No problem with that. His net worth is estimated at $100 million, and he made his money by being a pastor of this church. So that money comes from somewhere.
Yeah, and he talks about it. He does not take a salary from Lakewood, which is, by the way, a freaking football stadium. He comes from his...
Jim, I don't understand where your rage is coming from. Why are you so outraged about this?
Because you're not being charitable. He's not preaching some crazy... Some people might say the message is crazy, that God loves you. But I think you can find in Scripture that, yes, if you do put your faith in God, God will at least take care of you. Maybe not with a Ferrari, but God will, you know, look after you. And I think a lot of us hope in that.
I think he is a false teacher. And if you don't like that, I think that, tough. I don't know what else to tell you. You don't like what
I'm
saying.
All I'm saying...
You know, it is what... Okay, here's the thing, Jim. I'll give you the last word. But I'm critical of his theology and the way in which he, like so many others who are probably much worse than him in this regard, lead people astray. Yes, I am critical of that, and I don't apologize for it. And I don't back down from what I said.
And you can be critical of that. But like I say, even that bishop from Australia who was falsely imprisoned and then got released talked with Drew Mariani about this, and he even said, hey, man, I listened to that Joel Osteen. Yeah, Cardinal Pell, I listened to that Joel Osteen. He was super, inspiring. And him and Drew Mariani were at least charitable with the way he handled him. He's not a, you know, crooked schmuck who's trying to take your money so he can, you know, buy a jet. Now, maybe he does fly a jet. I don't, or, you know, have his own jet. I don't know. But my point
apparently
is,
he does.
It's not charitable to paint him like that.
Well, we just disagree on that issue, Jim.
All right. Fair enough.
I appreciate you talking to me, though. And I appreciate your conviction. Thank you.
Isn't it okay to appreciate a message from someone, but not, you know, totally jump into everything that their life is about? Like when we listen to music, yeah. I'm not following the artist's life, but sometimes the message in the music is meaningful to me.
I agree. And that there's room for that, no doubt about it. But I wasn't asked to comment about how his message makes me feel. I was asked to comment about how he and other preachers make use of the term faith and what their message is. I was asked to give a critique of that issue, and that's what I did. But, I mean, I know Cardinal Pell. I know him personally. I spent a whole afternoon with him. Well, anyway, I won't get into all that. But the point is, I have a feeling that if you were to ask Cardinal Pell, now, what do you think about his theology? Do you agree with the theology of the health and wealth preachers? I'm pretty confident Cardinal Pell is going to say, I don't agree with that. Maybe he was really uplifting to me while I was in jail, in which case that's good. But that wasn't the question that the listener asked me. So there you have it. Hey, Jim, thank you. I appreciate your passion on this issue. I'll be right back with hour three right after this.
Hey, what happened?